Okay, so if you if you're listening from this beginning, we just finished with a centering exercise. This is Zen Talk number 93. We got 5, 10, 15, 23 people on, and there's going to be a lot more that listen afterwards. And this is going to be a cross between, you know, like a discussion and cat. I have not read the book. I've watched some YouTube videos and listened to some interviews regarding white fragility, but Kathy has taken a dive into the book. So I'm sure it might be a little bit more.
Well, let's see. Let me start with this. The intention of this discussion is to do our own inner work. Okay. And what does doing our own inner work mean? Obviously it starts with reading this book. I think this can be an in, but it's also about finding some teachers, some people to follow, some coaches, some podcasts that have, that talk about race and talk about a lived experience you haven't had. I think that similar to our political experiences where we live in these bubbles and we only hear the same things over and over again, it keeps us from being aware of other people's lived experiences. And then we often think the world looks the exact same way we think it looks. We think that people are experiencing the same thing we're experiencing, and we tend to not let in the experiences of others. And what does that mean? We don't let it in. We don't consider other people's viewpoint. We often have ways that we oppress other people's viewpoint. And we end up participating in something that maybe wasn't our intention, but we're unconsciously participating in by just not speaking up or not being aware. So I could go down that road for a while. But first of all, what I'll say is that the intention of talking about this book, why Todd and I wanted to discuss it, was to begin our own self-awareness process, but to also make sure you guys know that even though we are having this discussion, we are not the teachers when it comes to race. You need to find, you know, and on every show we've been doing, we've been listing the teachers that we have found that have been educating us. And while we are excited and feel privileged to have this conversation with you, we do encourage you to find other people to help you learn about fragility and also the Black experience.
So okay? Just so everybody knows, we're going to go, what, an hour?
Yeah.
And if somebody has a question or a comment, do we want them to jump in?
Yes.
Like we usually do?
Yes. And can I give another structure?
Sure.
So we can,
sure.
I was saying that, first of all, the intention, and I think the intention of Robin DiAngelo in writing this book is your own self-awareness. It's everything that we talk about on the show, that if you want to parent in a way that is, healthy and aligned, you first need to be conscious of your own beliefs and your own blind spots, which is paradoxical. Become conscious of your own blind spots. Basically, that means recognize your blind spots and have a willingness to be humble and practice humility. I have unfortunately seen a lot of people in the conscious parenting community and in just the parenting community overall struggle with this ability to have some humility and realize that this is not an area either where they're an expert or that they are not speaking to it at all. And in no way am I saying they have to do A, B, C, and D. There's different ways for everybody to talk about race and to learn. But I've seen a lot of pushback from people in my community, and I think that they can be good examples or role models of maybe how to not do that and how to have more of a sense of openness. So self-awareness is the first thing here when it comes to our parenting and our leadership.
So can I just, I have not read the book, and I'm just wondering, just by a show of hands, has anybody picked up this book other than Kathy? So 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe half, so great. And has anybody listened to any podcasts or any YouTube clips or anything with Robin DiAngelo? Okay. And then do you want to talk about why you chose this book versus all the other stuff?
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting through. Okay. Is that this, why I think this is a good book to start with is because it is the first you know, if not the first, one of the most important things to do is begin the dismantling process, which is the things we haven't seen. Okay. So a lot of us have, I think what she speaks about in this book is a lot of us have said, well, I grew up in this community, or I went to this school, or I have a Black friend, or I work with people who are Black, or whatever it may be. Even, you know, people who, you know, like my, you know, I have a few girlfriends who they adopted Black children. And so therefore they feel like, you know, I am white, but I have Black children, and therefore I see all these things. And even talking with them, there's these awarenesses, these things that they haven't seen, the dismantling within their own selves of what, you know, the systemic part of racism, the historical part that they had not seen or noticed or recognized. So I say that because that's what Robin DiAngelo talks about in this book, is starting to, instead of us becoming defensive about our experience, or our open-mindedness, it's having some humility about, yes, you've seen this, and maybe you've done a great job in certain areas, but there's more to see, and there's more to listen to. And there's, you know, like one of the most important things that I have been practicing and will continue to practice is not... it is following other people's lead on this and not feeling like we need to be the leaders of it. And so I saw a wonderful post today about the leadership is already there. Now we need to flank the leadership. Now we need to listen and be support systems for the leadership. You know, I watched this happen so much. You know, for those of you who were part of the Women's March so many years ago, I mean, there's so many stories we could tell, but you know, the Women's March, it began with at least some of the people who came forward and said, we're going to do this. We're a group of white women, and a group of women of color were like, we've been doing this. We've been leading these marches. We've been leading these protests. We can be the leaders. So that was kind of, you know, a big awakening for me, and it continues on.
So yes. One thing is, Matt has a question. Yes, when we get to him, but I want to just read one of the quotes that
Please.
You, and it was the last one I read through. So to prepare for today, quite honestly, other than some other work I'm doing, I read through all the quotes that Kathy took out of her Kindle, and we exported the notes and we put them in the email yesterday. But
so if you did in your email, there's like a link that says these are just some of the quotes. I actually pulled out 15 pages of quotes, and Kindle gave me a limit and said stop. So this is just I felt the most impactful of this.
So this was one that I underlined. It's the last one that was shared on that Google Doc. If as a white person, I conceptualize racism as binary and I place myself on the not racist side, what further action is required of me? No action is required because I'm not a racist. Therefore, racism is not my problem. It doesn't concern me, and there's nothing further I need to do. This worldview guarantees that I will not build my skills in thinking critically about racism or use my position to challenge racial inequality. So what I got out of that is, you know, just for example, I voted for Barack, so I'm not a racist. I have friends who happen to be Black, so I'm not a racist. I personally know a few different easy examples I come up with where I show my bias towards judging people based upon the color of their skin. So and we shared this on the podcast, like, so my invitation is for me to continue to do my work and see, you know, to find my blind spots. I feel like that's like a really good, like, mm-hmm. What's the point of this? Point of this is for us to locate our blind spots, and we need like mirrors for each other to do that in this discussion. And obviously most of the people on Team Zen are white, not everybody. So we don't want to like say that we're categorically speaking on behalf of all people of a certain color or race or whatever. I just want to like make sure that that's understood.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
well, and just to add to that, the importance of that quote is that is why, like Todd just did a good job kind of parsing out what I was saying. The reason why we don't want to be too resistant to, no, look at all the things I've done, or I've gone to this protest, or, you know, whatever it may be, is that if we say no, then we've closed the door on listening. You know, we may have done a lot of things, and we may have family members who are Black, and we may have, you know, we may have been working toward, we may be diversity trainers or whatever it may be. But when we say, no, that's not me, then the learning stops. And I want to piece together something real quick before we go to the question, is that this, and I think Todd and I have kind of figured this out as we've gone along, is this has been the message of universal principles of what Todd and I talk about on Zen Parenting all the time is that it's never done. That self-awareness is a practice, not only just with your partner to understand them better and to be a better parent so you understand them better, but to understand everybody, to help you relate to other people's experiences by understanding yourself first. Okay. So this is no different. Like for those of you who, you know, have listened to the show for a long time, you can start to see that, you know, I'm sure you already do see the threads of why self-awareness is super important here and why it starts with us, thus why this book is a good place to start, even though there's many, many books on racism right now that I hope you have all, you know, engaged with or noticed, but this is a good one.
So I'm going to turn it over to our friends to the north, Jacqueline and Matt are a couple up from Canada, and Matt has a question.
A couple of questions, one a comment or like a clarification. So a lot of the reading that I've been doing and discussions we've been having, I don't think the term systemic racism is quite understood what it means. And I think maybe if you could just go into that a little bit, as far as, because I don't think, and probably some people here as well don't quite understand what systemic racism is and what it means and why it is that we can't see it necessarily. Yeah,
she goes into that so much in the book. I mean, I've been listening to it and it's just, I mean, the words that keep coming up is the fabric of our society was built on racism, which is a concept that was introduced before the concept of race was introduced.
So that's part one of your question, Matt and Jacqueline, just kind of describe what systemic racism is. Is that part one?
Yeah, and how it applies and why it's such an issue.
So let's start there before I turn it to Kathy. Just so you guys know, sometimes I feel more connected with the person speaking if I click on speaker view on Zoom. Right now, Kathy and I are looking at the grid, the gallery, but it's easier for me to connect if it's a bigger picture of whoever's speaking. So I'm just throwing that out there. So sweetie.
But that's up to you because I like the grid. I like to see the grid. Systemic racism, basically, I think that Jacqueline just said it perfectly, that it's built into the fabric of our society, just like she said. I think this is why we need to understand the history, like the new Jim Crow, you know, Michelle Alexander, I think, wrote that, like having an understanding how even, you know, we focus a lot of our energy on these big shifts in our country as far as laws and legislation, but nothing really changed internally with people. And basically what happened is people continued to oppress or discriminate in other ways through new laws, through redlining, through, you know, through things that in our own society, in our own community, we may have never even known was happening. Or maybe we did, but it was spoken about in such a way that we accepted it as norm. Like one of the quotes in that I highlighted was by Christian. His last name is, I don't know if I can pronounce it.
It's like Peachy's an Italian guy.
So we almost had him come speak to our community. Okay. Yeah, Christian. I feel like not a very, my Italian. Picciolini. Okay, so my Italian isn't coming through. So he is somebody who speaks about white nationalism because he was a white supremacist. And now he speaks about it to educate people about how it shows up, how people get involved in it, the tactics they use to bring people into it. And a lot of it is just about shifting the language, you know, where before it was the KKK or white supremacy, and then now it's white nationalism. And now, you know, they just keep tweaking the language so it becomes normalized. If any of you saw Black Klansmen or you know the story of Black Klansmen, there was some really, you know, like heart-stopping moments in that movie where you see that a lot of our government today, like our leadership today, was a plan that was created a long time ago. And I know that sounds really like, you know, like almost a fiction, but see that movie and read the book, you know, read the man who wrote the book, find out who wrote Black Klansmen. So I'm giving the right language.
Okay.
But anyway, so I don't go too far off of that. To Matt's point, this is why history is super important. And Robin DiAngelo speaks to some of it, but you can find other books, you know, that focus on how racism has been integrated, built in from the very beginning into, I mean, even from the very beginning, as far as slavery, we, what people were taught was that racism, or excuse me, that Black people weren't of as, you know, weren't as valuable, weren't as human. They were dehumanized to allow us to have them be slaves.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they had to first be dehumanized to make slavery okay to us.
And the way they know that is, Declaration of Independence or Constitution, all men are created equal. Obviously, they did not consider any man of color a man.
And two-thirds.
Some human,
yeah.
Two-thirds representation.
So a lot of our country's history is based around this, like, aren't we amazing? But there's dark parts to our history that we overlook. And that's why reading is so important. You know, I feel like I'm a librarian. That's why you should go get your books. But this is why it's important to not only listen to people's lived experiences right now, but to dive in to the systemic nature of racism, so you understand that it's not, we do a lot of blaming. If they would just do this, if they would just do that, if they would do things the way I did. And the system was set up for people of color to fail.
Well, and it reminds me, we went to see a man named Brian Stevenson speak. He was
in Evanston.
He was in Evanston. And he wrote a book called Just Mercy. And there's a movie out that I haven't seen that I'm going to try to get our family to watch together, because they just decided that it's free on YouTube and free on Amazon Prime. I didn't read the book. I heard Brian Stevenson speak, and he was amazing. But one of the things I got out of him talking was that in Germany, they have these monuments to kind of remind us of the nastiness of what happened in the 1930s in Germany and 1940s. Whereas we are kind of turning a blind eye to it. So we skipped over the repairing part of our history. Mm-hmm. I feel like what this is doing to us right now is it's reminding us of how we got here. And we need to look at it instead of build monuments of Southern generals. Let's actually look at the history of what this is.
Well, and why did we build the monuments of Southern generals? Why were those built? Those were built as reminders to people that this was the belief system. They were not built just to say, here's our history. Like, even just reading about why those monuments were built and what they represent. And now we may have gotten to a point where people don't know that history and why they, and so now we're just saying, but it's history. But if you understand why they were built in the first place, I think you will also feel how harmful they are to the people who have to walk by them every day.
Should we go to Matt for Please. Part two? Yes. Matt, do you have a part two to your question?
I just wanted to say one more thing, as you're talking about movies, and how about the way she breaks down The Blind Side from a completely different perspective? I never considered all of the anti-Blackness mentality in that movie. I haven't even talked to Matt about it. Yet that's something I would normally bring up to him, because we both watched that movie, and it's this like story of rags to riches and how these, you know, this family helped out this young Black man. And it's just like, she breaks it down in a way that is like, wow, that is the systemic rape. That is how it's built into the fabric. It's because we watch a movie like that and it wouldn't even occur to me all of the anti-Blackness that's like in it. So it's just, yeah.
Exactly, Jacqueline. It reinforces, you know, everything you said, and this white savior experience that, you know, we with our open hearts, we go out and save these poor people versus realizing that they have, if given the same opportunities we've been given since birth, would be just fine. That they don't need, you know, the white savior experience is makes us feel better, but keeps the oppression intact.
This reinforces the white supremacy.
Absolutely.
So before we go to Matt, Kelsey, out in the chat box, Kelsey put something up. Seeing on Radio's podcast, Seeing White, is really great for learning the history, including how concepts of race and whiteness were created. And Edith says, being in Richmond, Virginia, and seeing the messages spray painted on the monuments has added so much context. The monuments have caused so much pain. So
I've seen some of those pictures, Edith.
Thank you for throwing that in the chat box. So Matt, what do you have?
Another comment, it might be better for later on in the discussion, I'm not sure, but maybe I'll just throw it at her now. I'm understanding that I had my own internal work to do, finding blind spots as you describe it, fully understand that. But from an external perspective, I don't feel like I should be someone who should be leading this change, more so following the change. Like you said a few minutes earlier, like they've been doing this for years. it seems disingenuous for me in my background. It's like the leadership training we have, my brain immediately goes to, okay, I'm going to step in, take on a leadership role and try and solve the problem. Doesn't feel like that should be my role here. It should be more of a following role, support following role, if that makes sense.
Yep.
I wonder if you speak to that for a minute.
Sure. Let me go first because I think it's a really good question. And my new mantra is to listen to men and women of color and talk to other white men. So I do feel like I'm the leader in talking to these other guys who have maybe not done as much work as I have. Not that I've done a lot of work, but it's safer for me to just shut up when somebody talks about, well, yeah, well, what about black on black crime? Or what about this? I feel like that's my moment to take the information that I've informed myself with and to ask questions and talk to these other white guys, because it's too much to ask men and women of color to lead the charge. I want to listen to them and learn from them. And then I need to go ahead and talk to my circle of influence, which is mostly white, and start having this conversation. So that's what I
Yeah. And Matt, you in a literal leadership role in the military, you know, it can be, you can lead the charge of bringing men and women of color to speak. You can lead the charge of bringing, you know, bringing to the attention men and women of color who have written things or who have done podcasts and bringing those to your group. So instead of you, so your leadership just looks different. Instead of saying, I am going to lead and teach this, you're going to lead by offering new information. So it's just like a little tweak. And then that, because it's like this very fine line, like, you know, and again, I know many of you are hearing this. The fine line is there are women and men of color who have been doing this work their entire lives. So we don't need to recreate the wheel. We need to listen and learn and become educated. And then the other call to action is speak up, do something, don't be silent. So the middle place is, or, and believe me, it's not a perfect middle place, meaning sometimes we go a little too far one way or the other. Todd and I are learning that as we go, and we will continue to as long as we're in this job that we're in, as we're learning as we go. But is to, Matt, use your leadership to speak up for people who don't always have a microphone. For example, you know, many of you know, because I know you follow a lot of the same thought leaders, today is Pass the Mic Day when it comes to podcasting and when it comes to you know, people offering their space, if it be their social networking page, and they are either interviewing men, and it's women, it's black women, actually, it's not men, women of color, and, you know, shining a light on their work and on their books, because as it says for Pass the Mic Day, people listen to white women, and black women don't always get the same kind of platform. So that's kind of your platform, Matt, is like, what kind of platform do I have and how can I share this platform with men and women of color?
We're going to go to Andrea in a second, but
I think he has one more question.
Hang on a second, Matt. I do want to say, because what I want to get better at is the whataboutisms. Mm-hmm. So I had a meeting last Wednesday with 26 other men. We talked about race. And after the meeting was over, there's a man said, but what about the amount of, and he started spewing out all these statistics about the amount of men, white men, that have died at the hands of police officers, whether or not the police officers are white or black. And I was kind of stuck. Like I didn't, like he had these stats and I'm like, all of a sudden I didn't like know what to say. And I want to be able to kind of reflect back to him what I think is my truth and the truth, which is,
or the truth of people of color.
Okay.
It's not really your truth,
well,
right?
The way I see something.
Okay, the way you see something. Okay.
Is, yes, are there white men that have been killed by police officers? Yes. But my thing is, I don't think they were killed because of the color of their skin. And then Kathy gave me one last week, which is, if you could snap your fingers and just decide what color you are or what color your kids are going to be, a quick way to kind of like...
Cut to the chase.
Cut to the chase is... I don't think many people would say, yeah, I wish I could snap my fingers and wish I was a black man in this society, because we all know that the statistics, the amount of racial profile that happens, like nobody, in my judgment, anybody with common sense.
But say, but it's, you gotta be really, it, I'm okay, stopping
help
your
me,
words.
Help me okay. with my words.
Because it's not it, what you say to a person who is white. This is not about everybody wants to be white, because that's not true at all. What it is that to a person who is white, when they say, but what about this and what about this, you reflect back to them, okay, what if you could snap your fingers and now you could walk through the world as a black man? Do you think you would be safer? Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be true? So it's not about saying everybody wants to be white.
No, thank you.
And that's what you're saying. You were just saying something that
I was saying it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, but it's about to people who really think we're having the same experience, who really try and say, but it's the same because white people are killed and black people are killed and it's the same. It's reflecting back. It's the, you know, it's the, that the thing that they did in the classroom of the blue eyes, brown eyes, you know, it's recognizing that there are certain people who do not have the same rules and rights in our society, meaning that, you know, we may say, but it says so on paper, but is that the truth in our interactions and our experiences?
Can we go to Andrea?
Absolutely. I think Matt had one
more thing.
I know,
but we're going to let Matt off the hook for a second. Okay. So we're going to go over to Andrea.
Okay.
Hi, Andrea.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm on a new computer. Okay. You can tell me if this is off topic, but I'm a social worker, and I've always considered myself to be somebody who was very supportive of people of color and thought I was so, you know, woke and all these things. But these recent times have also been making me want to confront anything I've been doing to also like contribute to systemic racism and just look at it a little bit more deeply. And so I had actually downloaded White Fragility last week and I've started reading it, and it's been eye-opening. So I was excited to hear that you guys were talking about this today. But I guess my question is, I live outside of St. Louis, but like 30 miles south in a rural community. And it is a white community. And in my current circles, I don't have a lot of people of color in my current social circles. And so even though I've followed some of your recommendations of people to follow on Facebook, and I think things like that are important, I don't know what to do on like a personal level. And then the same, like my kids, they're young now, they're 1 and 3, but they're going to grow up in a school that's probably almost 100% white. And it's like, I would love to have friends who are black, but like, I also can't just go shopping for a black friend, and that feels so wrong. And so I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Absolutely.
So, yes,
that's a great question. By the
way, I totally struggle with that, Andrea. I would say 90% of the people that I deal with are white men and women. I feel like we need to be a little intentional, and it is weird. Like, it's just kind of like, you don't want to go shopping for a man or a woman of color, 'cause that seems like messed up. But at the same time, you do want to like
engage
because they look different than we do, because as Brian Stevenson taught, proximity is the key to everything. Like, it's hard to walk in a black man's shoes unless they're in your vicinity. I don't have an answer for you, Andrea. All I will say is that I said the same thing, like, wow, well, the suburb I live in is mostly white, so there's nothing I can do about it. Well, there is men and women of color in my community, and just whether it's ironic or not, the man showed up in my life who lives a block away from me, who's an African-American man, and I sat down with him on Saturday morning, and I, for the first time, had a 90-minute conversation with a man of color about race and other things. So I don't have an answer. I would say first start with the intention, saying, you know, universe, I'm setting an intention, and then do something about it. Like, how can you be in the, because there's plenty of things you can do. You could drive to the other side of town and go to the coffee shop there. Like, there's a lot of things you could do. It's just, it takes a little more work.
Well, and I would say that some of it happens very organically, that you don't have to force something, that if you are following, you know, thought leaders of color, then you find yourself in a podcast and you find yourself, you know, reading a new book, and then you find about a community organization that you didn't know about, and you attend a meeting, and then, or you find yourself at a protest and you meet, like, I don't think we have to go 0 to 60. I mean, because that is, it does not feel organic. It feels a little inauthentic of I'm doing, that's what they, you know, and you guys probably got this from the book, but that's called performative, you know, like where I'm going to demonstrate this to everybody else, where true relationships and interactions happen because we're actually doing something different and we're making an effort. You know, it's like we're engaging in things that we didn't before. And I, you know, like Tad said, we've set an intention years ago and it's still, a work in progress for us. You know, this, it continues on and on and on because this applies to all communities that we may not be, you know, incorporated with. Like, you know, this month is Pride Month, you know, how many, you know, friends do you have who are gay couples? Or, you know, there needs to be an intention of, I want to learn more, I want to know more. And that, you know, if followed, we end up having experiences. And again, if you can look at it as, why this starts with self-awareness is if you're just doing it to demonstrate to others, it's going to fade out. Mm-hmm. But if you start doing the work inside of you and it becomes something of value and importance to you, you will never stop. Do you see? Like performative is, you know, like, you know, I'm a social worker too. So I should be doing this. People will expect this from me versus I'm going to really just take this time and listen and learn and trust that through a new practice and awareness, those things will come. And if, and like Tad said, it takes some effort. It's not that you just make a vision board and, you know, use The Secret, but doing it in a little more authentic way rather than a pressured way.
So a few things. Jacqueline says, we started adding more children's books to our collection that talk about skin color, the science behind it, the civil rights movement. It makes me feel like I'm exposing my younger children to these topics, despite not having any real relationships with people of color. And then Alicia says, I was in a webinar of talking to kids about this stuff. And the one thing brought up regarding kids is to take them to parks with diverse kids playing and to have books with happy, healthy families of many races and cultures and make those books where the characters of color speak, but aren't just the token non-white characters, and do what we are doing here. Do the inner work yourself. And then Jacqueline says, did anyone see the John Oliver show this week? I've saved it, but I haven't watched it yet. Last week tonight, that short clip at the end where the black woman breaks down why she's so angry was very, very intense. And it really hit me emotionally. Bit by bit, I feel like I'm understanding the history of this issue and how it persists. And Alicia wants to add something.
So before,
sure, go ahead.
So Andrea, before we move over to Alicia, do you have any thoughts or comments about that?
Yeah, I think we have been trying to diversify the books that we're reading to them. And something that I was thinking is like, oh, we could go, you know, my initial thought was like, oh, we could go volunteer in St. Louis. And I'm like, no, that's not. So I love the suggestion about just like going to the park or like museums in St. Louis and just making it just more natural. Yes. I don't feel like I'm trying to be performative by like wanting to have more intimate relationships with people of color, but that part I still struggle with. Like I work in St. Louis, so it's not like I'm always insulated, but my friend group still sort of remains what it is. But I do like the idea of being more relaxed about it because what will come as opposed to like, okay, I must do this right now. I have to go find some new friends. Like that's so pressure filled and awkward. And then I think like, oh, if I saw someone of color in my community, what am I supposed to like run up to them and be like, hi, like, and of course not. That's so silly, but just either letting it happen naturally or not forcing it to happen.
So one thing so a man in my men's group asked this question, like, you know, he had some women of color in his office and he's like, with George Floyd, he's like, I don't know what to say. So the man who led the meeting was an African-American man. He goes, four words, how are you doing? And then he's like, shut the F up.
Yeah.
So just ask somebody, how are you doing? And then shut up and don't teach and just listen. So that's the one thing. And then there was something else, but I'll go to Alicia first.
Oh. And I'll add to that, like, and I know you know this, Andrea, but in no way to Andrea or anyone else am I saying you're being performative. I'm not like saying, oh no, you're being, I know that the intention is good. And you're saying, I really want this for myself because I know that not only is that good because then I am more open and aware, but I really want to have a very rich group of friends. And when I say rich, I mean diverse, richly diverse. I don't mean money. And so the intention is good, But to your point, the performative part would be the jumping too fast. You know, that's the part. So I know that if you're on this call, you are, this is, I assume you of course want that in your life. And it's, how do we do this in a way that is first internal and then allowing the external to unfold?
Well, I'm a little apprehensive in saying this because I don't want us to think that, oh, we'll just throw money at this problem. But anybody on this call can go to a web link right after it and donate to NAACP or Jamal or something like that. And the reason I'm apprehensive is, like, I don't want to think like, well, I don't want to have to deal with this, so I'm just going to throw my credit card down for $50. But if you really want to do something immediately right now, that is one thing you can do.
Sure. Well, and like anything we're learning, you know, financial donation or where we put our money is one piece of it. It's not the whole thing. It's not, I'm good now because I donated here. It's just a piece. And being thoughtful about where your money goes and who you're donating to or what you're purchasing or, you know, what organizations you're supporting, that's where money comes into play, because that is connected to us. We are either perpetuating a problem or we are hoping with our dollars to decrease or shine light on a problem.
So we're going to go to Alicia, and then Steve had a question after Alicia. So Alicia, I think you're unmuted and you're good to go.
I am. I just wanted to say one thing from that webinar that was quite shocking to me, was because it was focused on speaking to kids. And they had like a graphic up with kids of different ages and how young their preferences for a specific race actually form. Mm-hmm. And so you do have to be very intentional about like exposing their environment to various races. So even as young as little babies and what books you show them, you know, finding baby books that have diverse babies in them. And then as they get older and they start having books with characters, making sure that those characters actually speak. Like he gave an example of before all this started, he was working in a classroom and the woman had the teacher, I don't know if she was a woman, but the teacher had said, oh, I diversified my library. Look, it took them 9 books before they found one where the person of color in the book actually spoke.
Mm.
Yeah. So I was like my mind was just blown. So, even having, if you're putting pictures up on your walls of families or something, like having art and decorations that are diverse as well. Like those are things that I hadn't really thought about, you know? And then of course they also really reiterated doing what we're doing here and doing, Andrew is saying about wanting to have a Black friend. Like if we don't have diverse cultural friends ourselves, then we can't, our children likely won't either. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to reiterate that.
Yeah.
I think the intention of wanting that is good. And I think the fact that you know that you want that and you want it authentically will, I would assume, make it so that even though it maybe is awkward, you can still make it happen. And maybe just like acknowledge the awkwardness of like I was thinking about, I feel really awkward about reaching out to my friends that are of color and being like, I don't want you to be like my token friend or my token experience, my token source of information of all this. So I'm kind of struggling with like, I want to reach out to them, but I kind of like don't know how. And I think maybe all I need to do is be like, hey, would you be willing to have an exchange with me because I'm feeling awkward about this? And I just, you know, I just want that.
Absolutely.
Okay. So a few things. One is, I'll read Steve's chat in a second. The first thing I just want to say, so if somebody can Google the 75 things white people can do to combat racism, just Google it and post in the chat. You've seen that, right? It's
on Medium.
It's a post. I don't know where it came from, but it's things that we can do right now. And then the other thing is we've been doing the Zen Talk, this Team Zen thing for a few years. This is the first time we've ever had the gallery mode has 2 different boxes, screens on it. So it just, I don't know, it warms my heart a little bit to know that this is the most popular Zen Talk we've ever had. And it's just an indicator of how you know, I don't want to like
how much work we have to do.
How much?
Let's go that way instead of commending ourselves.
Thank you very much. So it's refreshing to see the amount of people that want to look in the mirror and say, what can we do right now to help the situation?
And, you know, Alicia, what I would say to you and to anybody here who is thinking of the same thing is I want to reach out to my friends of color, maybe to see how they're doing, because that is a really good question, because right now is a very difficult time and a lot is being brought to the surface. And also saying, letting them know, you know, like, it's like, how would you talk to anybody? You would say, I care about you. I am so glad we're friends. I want to open the door to the fact that if I say something that sounds ignorant, or if I am not being a good listener, can we have enough trust between us that you tell me that, and that I will be like, you know, with our friends, just like we do with our children, with our partners, like instead of being like, I'm going to tiptoe around this subject, or I am going to try and go in a back door, or I'm going to try and just like take it head on. And say, and it is like to Alicia's point, it's awkward because race, we, you know, we've been either taught to not talk about it or we've been taught there's something offensive about it. But like one of, just on this point, one of the best stories in the book is where Robin's talking about like, if we're with our children in a grocery store, like our young children, and they point to a black man or woman and say their skin color's different or they're black. And we're like, shh. But what if our kids pointed to someone white and said they're white? What we'd be like, yeah. So why do we say shh when our kids point to someone who's black? It's almost like it's this thing we're not supposed to discuss versus yes, their skin is a different color, like head on. Mm-hmm. And this is why, you know, like, and not head on forcefully, you know, not head on, like, I'm going to ask you questions and you're going to be my person. And this is Alicia's point. She's like, I don't want to do that to my friends, but to say, I honor us as friends, and I also know we have different lived experiences, and I just want to open that door to when you feel that I'm off, or if I feel, you know, just let's have a conversation. And the first one may be awkward, and it may be awkward for a year, but then after that, it's, you know, becomes a more typical conversation, because that's why we're doing these conversations and this work, is so race is not a taboo topic anymore, so that we can be open to it and we can not be like shh to our children, but that we say yes, and that we have some information to share. Like, I want to go back to the question about, or some, you know, the comments people have made about having the books and the movies. That is a place where Todd and I dropped the ball big time when our kids were little, is that we had the more like Disney oriented generic books and movies where we felt like, oh, the diversity here. And we watched Sesame Street and Dora the Explorer. And we were thinking this is good, but we now in hindsight, we did not have enough books of, with the, you know, the person of color being centered in the book and being the protagonist and just experiencing joy. Not every book needs to be about the struggle with racism, you know, like books that are just about life and about enjoying the pool and enjoying the park and being, you know, that's where I feel like at least, you know, because the investigation necessitates we go back in our parenting and say, where did I drop the ball and how can I pick up that ball now? And that is one place that, you know, and again, it just, we can't. We just dropped the ball there. That's
yes,
all I'm going to say. And so for those of you who have young children, you know, I couldn't encourage that more. Having books, not just about the race experience, not just about, you know, Martin Luther King, but about children of color who are centered protagonists.
So Steve didn't have a question, but I'm going to read his post. He said, I'm interested in asking my children who are 12 and 14, how they define racism. Mm. They tend to have a very different concept of things due to their own experiences. And I always seem to learn something from them when I assume I will be teaching. Kathy and I talked about that. Mm-hmm. I think on the podcast we did a week ago, Sunday, you know, we think that we got to teach our kids, you know, we have older kids, they're 12, 15 and 17. They're much more
enlightened, open,
and we have a lot to learn from them. I know for those of you guys who have toddlers, it won't apply, at least not yet, but it doesn't mean that you can't start this conversation. I mean, I think the thing that changes this world is people communicating with one another through conversation, whether that be all of us together right now or us having a conversation with a man or woman of color in our life, or us having a conversation with our kids. So there's just a lot of different ways of going about.
Well, and realizing that our kids, especially our preteen or teenage kids, they have all sorts of different ways of getting information. They have influencers that they follow, YouTubers that they follow. And what I am so grateful to know now from my kids over the last couple of years is the majority of the influencers that my girls follow have been very proactive when it comes to things around race or any kind of discrimination or any kind of prejudices, that they're very vocal. Like when everything started after George Floyd was murdered, I sat down at the dinner table and I go, girls, do you know what happened in Minneapolis? And they knew the whole story and this is what happened. And they had already seen, not just on local news, but through the influencers that they're following. And my girls were already posting Black Lives Matter things. So, that question that Steve has is, we actually have a lot to learn. Like I was telling them about this MTV thing that I'd seen, and it was called Decoded. And this girl who's such a great speaker when it comes to things around race, and I was telling them about Decoded, and they're like, that's old, like that's good, but there's been so many things since then. And it's just nice to, we don't have all the answers.
No.
Start
there.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over to Edith, who has a comment. Hi, Edith.
Hello. So I have daughters. My oldest one is 15. My younger one will be 13 in September. And my older daughter has had a boyfriend who's Black, his mom's white, his dad's Black. And when they first started dating and he came over the house and everything, and we started going places, even if it's like to Target or whatever, I told him, and because I'm kind of awkward anyway, I'm like, hey, just so you know, I'm awkward. But also, if we're ever anywhere where you don't feel comfortable, please let me know. We live in suburbia. There's a lot of mixed income that comes into the schools that my daughters go to, apartments, that kind of thing. And so our bubble has always been like, when we go to the community pool, it's mostly all white people, and so I just wanted him to say, be able to say like, hey, somebody's looking at me weird. He's 6'1", 14 years old. He doesn't look 14, just like my daughter doesn't look 15. But giving him permission and knowing it was safe for him to say, hey, can we bug out, or can we cut this short, or I'm not comfortable. I think that really helped both him and her to be able to come to me and let me know that it was safe to do that. Like, even if we were in a circle of my friends that were making them uncomfortable, that we could shift the focus, or we could just, hey, I gotta fly, something came up.
Yeah, and it seems like what you're describing, Edith, is just become an ally.
Yeah.
Right? And figure, and we all can be an ally in so many different ways and with so many different people. So,
and you know why I love that too, Edith, is because you're asking him the question and you're saying, this communication is open between us. And so even if there was a misstep that you made or a friend made or someone, that he can share that and that you're open to it, because that's kind of that's the piece, is when we're like, and again, I think this group is beyond this, I hope, but the whole thing, like, I don't see race, or it doesn't matter to me, that is a door closed.
Can you say more about that? Because most people might be familiar with that, but we have 120 people on this team.
Well,
and we talked a little bit about it on the podcast this week, but just restate it.
When we say things like, I don't see race, or all lives matter, first of all, we have to realize how offensive though both of those terms are. I don't see race basically means I don't see you. And I don't see your experiences, and I don't see your experiences as different than mine. And I don't see the whole of you. I only see the part of you that is in agreement with my experience. Mm-hmm. And then all lives matter is the same thing. It's a disregarding of the fact that Black lives, we have not focused our attention on how Black lives, Black bodies are treated differently in our society We try, it's almost like talk about a door closing. You know, we're not acknowledging the systemic, going back to what we were talking about before, the systemic oppression that has created the disparity or certain communities or certain outcomes when it comes to Black families. I mean, let's just, you know, again, going down another path, but let's just talk about our prison system and the war on drugs and what we did in dismantling families. And breaking, you know, it's there's so many pieces of our system that has led to the challenges that we're facing today. So again, I don't want to get too far from Edith's point, which is what she's doing is she's opening the door and saying, I'll talk about that. And I love that you started, Edith, with I'm awkward. So awkward conversations are welcome here. And you can tell me if there's something I'm missing because I care about you. Like, get to the human element. I care about you. And if I am not seeing a piece, part, or something about you, please let me know because I care. And
that was totally the thing. It was saying, I am not in your body.
That's right.
I do not know what you experience walking through the grocery store with your skateboard and your hoodie. Like, I'm given a pass.
Yep.
So, there are things that I admittedly am not going to know. And it's out of my ignorance. So if you can share that with me, you're teaching me also.
Yes.
And I appreciate that.
Yes. Yes. I like that's beautiful. And, you know, the language is, I will follow your lead, mm-hmm. you know, allow me to follow your lead. And you know, I will show up the best I can too. And you know, the best I can it sometimes means that we don't say the right thing or drop the ball or, you know, Todd and I have become really hyper aware of the way we communicate and express because we're not always doing it perfectly. That's the practice. And people say, well, I don't want to be hyper aware. This is what, you know, this is kind of where we say, but I want things to be normal, but normal means people are being oppressed and not recognized. Like what this book is breaking open for us is that what we haven't even noticed our privilege, maybe parts of it, but not the hugeness of our privilege. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you can just go to the littlest things. Band-Aids match our skin. They don't match Black skin, you know, like, and I'm using that as a metaphor for everything else. Our society has been geared and filtered to meet our needs. We have a Black History Month because somehow we haven't incorporated Black history into our history. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, I get really on tangents, but please, does anybody else have questions?
Well, we're getting close to the end here.
Oh, we are. Okay.
Dawn said that she loves Edith's take on I'm awkward. Like even that, like what's great about the I'm awkward statement is it dissipates the awkwardness because you're calling it out for what it is. So yeah, that's really good. And, you know, kind of coming back full circle. So Dawn shared something with us on last week's Zen Talk about there were some people at this barbecue, the pool party, whatever it was, and she didn't really know how to say that she disagreed with what was being shared. And Matt started this, like, okay, how do we do this and how do we go about it? You know, for me, it's like empower myself with information and have these awkward, difficult conversations with our friends who we love, but see the world in a way that doesn't align with the way I see it. And I feel like my job is just to bring some awareness, at least share my own truth to those people. Because if enough of us are doing that, then all of a sudden the pendulum switches over from, yeah, dude, this ain't cool. That comment you just made is not cool. You know, and what's funny is like my fear of like getting made fun of for my friends is so small compared to the fear that any man or woman of color has to go through on a daily basis when they walk down the street.
Well, and I've found, and maybe you guys have found the same thing, is the more educated I become, the more that fear has decreased. Like the more information I have, this is the dismantling again, the internal, the unlearning, the more ignorant those statements sound, where it's not as difficult to say, well, that's not true, or do you understand that saying all lives matter is offensive, and let me explain why. But before we'd be like, I know that doesn't sound good, but I don't know what to say. But the more educated we become, we don't have to get into some big fight and confrontation. It's just really, as Todd said, just speaking what we have learned and giving credit to the people that we learned it from, instead of just, you know, just saying, you know, like there's been some people, you know, I see it online all the time, you know, where people will post a quote and not say who said it, or post, you know, here's what I've learned. And we need to also give credit to our teachers and the books we're reading. And we need to the best of our ability, you know, to continue that conversation. And on that note, there is a podcast that I've been listening to. It's super long, so I've been listening to it in chunks, but it's been so good. It's Ezra Klein's podcast, and he interviewed Ta-Nehisi Coates, who wrote Between the World and Me. And the interview, he did it last Wednesday, but it's such, I feel like I got so much more language understanding and really grounded ways of understanding certain things that I'm not even going to try and, you know, do justice. I just want you to go listen to it. Again, it's the Ezra Klein Show. And he, you know, talks to Ta-Nehisi Coates. And, you know, I already talked to you guys on Team Zen about listening to Austin Channing Brown's podcast on the Good Life Project. And she's also on Brené Brown's podcast today. But you don't have to figure out how to say things, because there's all these teachers offering us this information that make it so much easier, like if we just, you know, kind of give ourselves over to it.
So we're going to be back here next week doing a regular Zen talk. 2 weeks from today, we're going to basically do exactly what we just did, but just go further with what we were doing. You know, Kathy had probably a whole bunch of notes that she never got to, and that's fine. I'd rather err on the side of us kind of talking to one another. But if I can just kind of like sum up, figure out how you're going to be an ally today, or how am I going to be an ally today? And it could be done in so many different ways. It could be teaching your kids something. It could be you reaching out to somebody. It could be having a difficult conversation with somebody at a barbecue. It could be donating money. But whatever it is, just do something. You know, Kathy and I are big believers in, you know, just do something, even if it seems tiny. Because the tiny things, if you do it, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I could do that. What if I did this? And then all of a sudden these habits start to build on it. And then there's the collective. If we all do a little bit, there's something beautiful that goes into there.
Well, and, you know, one of our, Todd and my, you know, favorite teachers, someone that not only do we listen to what he has to say, but we try and organize with him, is Jamal Cole, who was at our conference. And he organized a protest this weekend that we went to and took the kids to. And one of the things he says all the time is, I want to give it the right 15 words. I was looking it up because I always feel like I'm saying it wrong. But basically, what is one thing I can do today to give back to my community? And that means, like Todd said, maybe that's first, to give back to my community, I need to do some internal work, right? Or maybe it's to start attending or organizing or being a part of something I haven't been a part of before, or getting to know people I haven't gotten to know before, or listening to podcasts I haven't. It doesn't matter, but I like the idea of what is one thing that I can do for my community. I was going to say something else, but oh, I know. Also, on Team Zen, on Zen Talks going forward, you can always bring up race. Like, this is not race is not something we save for white fragility talks.
Yeah.
Like, race is part of our parenting, just like talking about sex is part of our parenting, and talking about any kind of differences, and talking about, you know, establishing friendships and relationships. Race is not a topic that is like one off of everything else. It's a part of our parenting. And if we can incorporate it, as many of you are, early into our conversations and into our experiences with our kids, then the awkwardness, even though we'll always be awkward in our own way, it dissipates and it becomes
some more typical than others, sweetie.
It becomes typical conversation rather than difficult conversation, you know?
So we'll be back here next week. Don't forget, we have that member profile page, so us team members can get to know each other a little bit better. So please jump on that. It's on your my profile page on the Zen, on the Team Zen page. And then in closing, you ready for our new closing, sweetie?
Oh boy.
I'm not going to unmute everybody and say, we're all just going to do jazz hands to each other so we can all say goodbye to each other. So let me see the hands. Let me see the hands. Andrea, there you go. Is everybody, Carrie, Sarah? Wow, that's a lot of jazz hands.
And if you guys have any questions or examples or whatever, put it on the Team Zen Facebook page and bring your questions to the next Zen Talk and the next conversation we have about white fragility. Like, you know.
Yeah, and keep trucking, for goodness sakes.
And thank you for being here.
See you guys next week. Peace out. Love and light.